Now, a recent Gallup poll shows that socialism has gained quite a bit of acceptance in the U.S. over the years. 43% of Americans in that poll say socialism would be a good thing for the country. Back in 1942, 77 years ago, just 25% felt that way. Since 2010, a majority of Democrats have said they view socialism positively, including last year when 57% said so. In fact, according to a new poll from The Hill, Bernie Sanders, a self-described Democratic socialist, has 17% support in a 20-plus candidate race. He trails only Joe Biden at 36%. So why the growing appeal of some form of socialism? Gerald Poder is a professor of history and American studies at Lawrence University in Appledon. Gerald, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Well, some polling shows that people have a hard time defining socialism, and that's fair. It covers a lot of ground. Can you give us some working definitions of socialism?
Well, of course, that's the big problem. If people are asked, do you support socialism, and they say yes, and they're unable to give a coherent definition of socialism, does it really count? My definition of socialism, and obviously you can't look it up in the dictionary. It actually varies, I think, from individual to individual, but my definition is the ownership by the government of the means of production and the providing by the government of various services such as health care, employment, education, even income that we would normally see from the private sector. So it's a two-sided definition. Ownership by government and running or planning of the economy and providing government services.
And it's not an either-or necessarily. There are different nations have had different scales, I guess. One nation might provide Social Security. One might own the auto factory. There's a lot of room for different...
It's definitely a continuum. And, for example, in the Scandinavian countries, which are usually cited as examples of socialism, they don't necessarily go all the way. They have a free enterprise, free market system, but the government provides a great deal in the way of services that we do not provide here in the United States. And also, there are very high tax levels to pay for those. So it's a continuum.
When you look at the United States, I know it's polls can be a little opaque sometimes for what people are really looking for. Let's take the first part of your definition. Do you think there's an appetite for state ownership of the means of production for, say, consumer goods, manufacturing, that kind of thing?
My feeling is that there is not. And the emphasis that most democratic socialists place on their program usually is on the second part, the provision of services. They're usually a little vague as to what kind of constraints on free enterprise there will be, because I think they understand that there is a strong individualist, independent impulse in American history, in American society. In fact, what I do is I like to break down American history generally, and even America today, into two competing impulses, an impulse towards independence and individualism, I'm going to make it on my own, leave me alone, and an impulse of a community, of security. I want the government to help me out with certain aspects of my life. And I think those are two competing impulses in American history. One or the other does not necessarily dominate in a particular period, but one has more influence than the other in some eras of American history. For example, the 1930s, where I think the community security impulse was predominant. In the 1920s and in the 1980s, the age of Reagan, I think it's fair to say that independence and individualism predominated. So I think you're always going to have a push-pull among the American people on that basis. Now, I think what makes our present-day politics unique is that it almost seems that the country is divided almost in half as to those impulses, and then we can see that from these polls on socialism. But that said, I wonder whether the majority of the American people, including the young, who are obviously the most supportive of the idea of socialism, how much they are going to be tolerant of higher taxes and also constraints on their consumption. even the young who say they want socialism, they also want their Netflix, they also want their Airbnb, they also want their Uber, they want their stuff. You know, they want their Amazon Prime. They want their products delivered in 2 days. I ordered something on a Friday afternoon through Amazon Prime. I'm certainly not young, and I was almost shocked to see that they promised it to me by Sunday morning. Sunday morning. Now, to me, that's a luxury. To many young Americans, that's a necessity. And I wonder if they are going to be that tolerant of a government that restricts free enterprise and restricts their consumption choices. That's what I really, you know, what I really wonder about. So the first part of it, the restrictions on capitalism, the restrictions on free enterprise, when push comes to shove, a lot of Americans, I think, are going to be very uncomfortable with that. The second part, the services, that's more popular.
Talking to Gerald Podair, professor of history and American studies at Lawrence University in Appleton, looking at the appeal of socialism, what socialism is, what people think about it, what it might mean here in the United States. And Gerald, a common argument is that there's kind of a slippery slope. You start with some maybe services, but it points in the direction of more and more state control and ultimately tyranny. What do you make of that argument often from conservatives or Republicans in the present day?
Well, that's the classic Republican or classic conservative critique of socialism. There was an economist named Friedrich Hayek who made that point very, very strongly in a famous book called The Road to Serfdom, which came out in the 1940s, where he argued that economic authoritarianism will eventually cause political authoritarianism. And while there is some truth to that, I would caution conservative critics of socialism to have a little more faith in our democratic institutions. As much as we argue as Americans over these issues, and as much as we contest elections, we have a remarkably strong democratic system. Even with what was going on with the Mueller report, we have a very strong democratic system, and I would caution critics of socialism on the right not to equate more government involvement in the economy automatically with tyranny and authoritarianism. This is not Venezuela.
And it seems like it gets confused because socialism and capitalism are more economic systems. Each of them can coexist with different kinds of political systems.
Right. There is nothing in the U.S. Constitution, of course, that says that our economic system should be capitalist or socialist. It's a separate kind of document. So socialism can exist in a democratic system. Now, again, since this is very complicated, I would caution those on the left not to assume that a more aggressively socialist or anti-capitalist political system would not interfere with political freedoms. You know, people can talk about democratic socialism and it comes out of the ballot box, but people who feel that their property is being confiscated are going to be very angry about that and probably use the political system or try to use it to overturn that. So for both the right and the left, I would caution against any apocalyptic predictions or visions for the United States one way or another.
We're talking about socialism, what it is, why, according to some surveys, more Americans view it positively, and how it could affect the race for president. We'll mention that in a few. Gerald Podair is with us, professor of history and American studies at Lawrence University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is socialism a dirty word for you or a possible positive? And what do you mean by it anyway? Do you think a little socialism and which form thereof would be good or bad for the United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about socialism. Gerald Podera is with us, professor of history and American studies at Lawrence University in Appleton. You can join in with your comments, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to our callers now. Brad starts us off in Plover. Brad, hi.
Hi. Your guest definition of socialism is the economic model Joseph Stalin instituted, which is actually state capitalism, not the original definition of socialism. I would equate socialism more with the government either running or heavily regulating the commons, which would be things like healthcare, the military, the fire and police department, and education system, whereas production of goods and services would be run more on a co-op model, where the workers would have more of a say in the decision-making and partly owning their place of employment instead of just having a fat cat at the top in his appointed board calling all the shots and the workers often being exploited or having no say whatsoever. So I would look to someone like Richard Wolff at the website Democracy at Work. He's the top expert in the nation on socialism. Have him as a guest to give a counterpoint to your guest's particular definition.
Brad, thanks a lot for the call. And Gerald, people have different visions for socialism, whether they view it positively or negatively.
Well, they do. And obviously words like cooperative, non-exploitative, those kinds of words are, you know, words that sound wonderful. And I think we can all support that. But of course, the devil is in the details. How are these companies going to be run on an everyday basis? Who will be in charge? I mean, those are the questions that never seem to get answered. And sometimes those questions can go off in directions that none of us want. In other words, I think the real fear in terms of socialism is authoritarianism. How much in the way of freedom is going to be taken away from the average American or the average American worker? In other words, let's take healthcare, which I think is going to be sort of the cockpit, the battleground of these arguments between the right and the left over socialism. Are Americans going to say, well, I don't like my doctor. I would probably choose another doctor if I could, but I'm happy to have a doctor. There are a good number of Americans who, under the present system, do not have a doctor at all. Is that what the average American will say, or will the average American say, I want to be able to choose my doctor, and I'm not going to agree to a plan that is restrictive in that way? I think that's the kinds of arguments that we're going to be having as Americans over socialism, however we define it.
Thanks for that call, Brad. We'll go to Mari now in Milwaukee. Mari, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Mari?
I wanted to know if your guest could explain the difference between democratic socialism and a social democracy.
Mari, thanks. Gerald, do you want to take a stab at it?
Well, again, these are words that are sometimes used in very, very different ways. Democratic socialism and social democracy, I'm sure that there are people who will distinguish between the two, but really what we're saying here is we're just reversing the terminology. It means that, at least theoretically, Americans will vote voluntarily for a system where the government will play a much greater role in the managing of the economy and will be responsible for the distribution of basic social services on a state level and not a private level. And I think social democracy and democratic socialism are basically the same thing in that way. Again, if you get someone on who's a member of Democratic Socialists of America, they may distinguish between the two. But I think generally that's the idea.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mari. In our last couple minutes, Gerald, let's talk about that sliding scale again, because it seems like most people are going to agree, not everyone, most people are going to agree that the government has a role in things like public safety, the police, fire, things like that. And I think most people in the United States, you were saying earlier, think private business is better off making Big Macs and cars and things like that. But healthcare, there's a lot of middle ground that, that, as you said, is going to be the point of debate.
Yeah, it is. And I think usually when liberals and conservatives argue about socialism, they eventually make their way to healthcare. Sometimes it's the first thing they start start arguing about, and I think it's really, as I said, going to be the cockpit. When I started taking notes for this interview and I started using examples of arguments over socialism, I noticed that my first two or three were involved the healthcare system. So I think that's really where the first argument, the opening wedge of do we want to be a socialist country, is going to come. It's going to come over health care. And it's interesting because after all the storming and anger and debates and screaming talk show hosts, we still have an Obamacare system that a good number of the people in the United States are, while not completely satisfied with, are maybe I'll just say okay with. And that's interesting, I think, because many on the right would call that a form of socialism.
We'll leave it there for now. Gerald, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Gerald Podair, professor of history and American studies at Lawrence University. We talked with him about socialism and debates over it and polling on socialism in the United States. We looked at a recent Gallup poll that shows 4 in 10 Americans embrace some level of socialism, though definitions may vary. Are you one of those 4 or not? You can still weigh in with your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR.